Okay, I'd like to share with you. I'd like to share with you a little bit of a thought process, and see where it takes us. This is an aura which sits by you for a long time, and then at some point it sort of like expands into a full thought. So the starting part of the thought process was actually relevant. It was in regards to Purim, and then I started wondering if this same thought which applies to Purim would apply to Pesach, because I do seem to see a continuum between Purim and Pesach. I think I spoke about that last year, the Purim-Pesach-Shavuos connection. So this is maybe a different point in that connection, but there is a flow which Chazal seem to see that there's a connection between the two. Specifically, the Gemara discusses why we celebrate Purim in Adar Sheni. It seems to be from the Gemara that that piece of Gemara, there's other Gemaras which indicate otherwise, but that the extra month is Adar Sheni. That the extra month is Adar Sheni means Adar Rishon is a 12th month. And we're saying instead of going to Nisan, we're going to a 13th month. So we're adding another month. So logic would be that Purim should be celebrated in Adar Rishon because that's Adar. So why are we celebrating Adar Sheni? The Gemara says to be masmat gula l'gula, because the two gulas go together. So in order that the two gulas go together, so therefore we celebrate Purim in Adar Sheni. So it means specifically there seems to be a connection between the two gulas. So I'm going to borrow a little bit from the thought regards to Purim, and then we're going to see if and how it applies to Pesach. So if you look at your notes, on page 4, there's a Gemara. This is a quote from a Gemara in Megillah. The Gemara says, "Lo yigra mitzadik einov," that the Bershom never withholds from the tzaddik. The Bershom's focus on the tzaddik means the Bershom does, the tzaddik does something. No. Tzaddik does something, and eventually the Bershom finds a way to pay him back. It might take a long time, and the Bershom never loses sight of that fact that he deserves this payment. So the Gemara says, "B'schar tzniyah shahayis abo berochol zach sabiyatze b'menu shol." Esther. So Rachel had tznius. Because of that, she was zoicha to have many, many generations later a descendant named Shaul. And because of Shaul's tznius, he was zoicha to have a descendant named Esther. And that's the Moor saying, well, there's a connection of tznius over here. So Moor says, what was the tznius by Rachel? The Moor goes through the whole story that the Yaakov gave Rachel the simonim. Rachel saw that they're taking Leah in instead of her, and she gave the simonim over to her sister. Then the Moor continues and says, what was the tznius of Shaul? The Moor says that Shaul was sent by his father to Shmuel, the Navi, to clarify where they lost some osonos, some animals. And while he was there, Shmuel sees him and anoints him to be the Melech Yisrael, the first Melech Yisrael. He comes back home, and his father asks him, "Did you find out where the sonos were?" And he says, he told him where the sonos were. He did not say over the fact that he had been appointed to be the Melech Yisrael. A tremendous anivus on his part that he didn't mention that, and that's what allowed him to be zeichet to have Esther. So we have to understand what exactly is the sneis element by Rachel. And what is the tznius element by Esther? Tznius being the idea of modesty that doesn't seem to fit into the words over here. What the point wasn't modesty. The tznius was the fact that she was quiet. She didn't say something. In that sense, it's a tznu and the fact that she kept quiet. So, ain Esther Magedis. We find that Esther did not say anything and Rachel didn't say anything. She kept quiet. So maybe that's the element of tznius. So it's also difficult to understand that in that way, because the Maral in his introduction to his Sefer on the Megillah and on Purim, he points out that the meat of tznius for Esther was very significant because the Yeshua which Klal Yisrael needed could only work through a Yeshua of Tznius, because there was an extraordinary moment of, which was needed, the Yeshua for Klal Yisrael, and only the Mid of Tznius can accomplish that, and we'll explain that why in a second. But if the Tznius is the idea of being silent, so the moment when the Yeshua was necessary, why was she talking? If the whole point is that you need the tznius for the Yeshua, and the Yeshua has to be needs the tznius, and the tznius is being quiet, so at the moment you need the Yeshua, you can't talk, you have to be quiet. So that can't be the pshat. So what I would like to suggest, that the mid of tznius over here is referring to the idea of being matznia oneself, to hide oneself, i.e. take yourself out of the picture. I'm hiding myself. It means normally the focus is on myself, and I'm moving that away. The physical manifestation of that would be I'm not drawing attention to myself because I'm not focusing on myself. I'm not self-centered. I'm not egocentric. I'm living in a world where the focus is outward. So we look at Rachel Imenu, and that's an extraordinary understanding of what happened over here. She is supposed to become the wife of Yaakov Avinu. She is supposed to be the mother of Klal Yisrael. She doesn't know when she makes this decision of forgoing the simonim that what's going to happen is that Yaakov is going to marry her a week later. As far as she knows, she's giving up the opportunity to be Yaakov's wife. That means the mother of Klal Yisrael, of all the generations to come, will be Leah. Leah will be have the eternity of being the mother of Klal Yisrael. She's going to marry Esav instead and have Amalek as a grandson. And that's what she's giving up. That's an extraordinary act of tznius in the sense of totally ignoring herself and focusing on somebody else's needs. My sister's going to be embarrassed. I need to focus on that and not on myself. So she totally hid herself in the sense of she took herself out of the picture. Esther, the way the Vilna Gaon explains the conversation between Esther and Mordechai when it comes the time to go to Achashverosh, and Esther seems to hesitate, she basically was arguing that in general, he calls him here at a certain point in time, and obviously when Achashverosh calls for Esther, she has to go. They, at that point in time, she's forced to be with the Melech, and she remains permitted to her husband, Mordechai, who is her husband. If she goes to the king willingly, so once they're together discussing, she'll be with the king, the king will take advantage of that opportunity, but she went willingly, she will lose the... she went willingly to another man, she's going to be prohibited to her husband. She didn't want that. So at the moment of Yeshua, she's focusing on her needs. So Mordechai says to her, "Im hacharesh tacharish beis azois, if you don't do something now, in the moment when it's necessary, if you don't address it, then you can't be the source of the Yeshua. Because the Yeshua has to be by a person taking himself out of the picture and focusing on the needs of others. And Klal Yisrael needs the Yeshua right now. They don't want to wait. So if you can't do that, and you're going to be self-focused, even to a small amount, even to that minimal amount is going to be, you can't be the source of the Yeshua. And the morale says, because the Yeshua, that Klal Yisrael really was deserved of destruction for many reasons, that the Rosh should go above and beyond and give Klal Yisrael that Yeshua requires that the human beings involved will go above and beyond. So that's the Mid of Tznius, which is she's called upon. So that idea of being matznia oneself and taking oneself out of the picture, the selflessness that Rachel Imenu had shown many generations earlier was now being expressed in her descendant when Esther says, "Okay, I'm giving myself up, kasher avadati avadati, and I'm ready to do that." So that's, I understand, the Nakuda of Geula, which is being expressed by in Purim. So then I started wondering if that is true in regards to Pesach as well. Do we find such a point in regards to Pesach? So it's interesting, when we look at Moshe Rabbeinu, we look at the Torah's biography of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu comes on the scene. Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be the person who's going to be the shliach, the vehicle to take the Jews out of Mitzrayim. He's going to be the vehicle to give the Torah to Klal Yisrael. And we're describing him, the Torah is describing Moshe Rabbeinu, basically Perek Beis of Shmos is describing Moshe Rabbeinu. So what do you know about Moshe Rabbeinu? He's living in the palace, and he leaves the palace, and the Medrash says he goes to the people, he says, "I wish I could replace you," and he takes off his cloak, and he puts his shoulder with the people. He takes himself out of the lap of luxury of the palace, and he goes out to the people. He goes out the second day and he sees that there's something taking place and he addresses it. Even though I would believe that in the back of his mind he understood that, that this action which he's taking against a Mitzri on the behalf of a Jew is going to endanger his position in the palace. And he does it anyway. And that's exactly what happened. So what we're told about Moshe Rabbeinu was his nosen ein v'libay, he focused on Klal Yisrael, not on himself. And then the end of that capital, we hear that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to be going to Klal Yisrael, because Vayedeh Elokim and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rashi says the exact same phrase, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was nosen ein v'libay on Klal Yisrael. When Moshe Rabbeinu, as it were, aroused this approach of selflessness, that he wasn't focused on, he was the one who convinced Paro to give the Jews a day off. He could rest on his laurels. He was a great Askin. He sat in the halls of power, and he convinced the great Pharaoh to allow the Jews to have Shabbos off. The Medrash says that's quite an accomplishment, right? No, he didn't. He went out there and he put himself into the trenches. So that's what we know about Moshe Rabbeinu. That's all we know about him. The Medrash says he runs away and he goes to another place. And he again, what does he do? He helps somebody. He's a total stranger in a land that he's already fighting with people. That's dangerous. And that's the first thing that he does. We find that this is the description the Torah gives us of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's all we know about him. We don't know that he's brilliant. And we don't know that he's not a phenomenal speaker. Right? We know very little about him in regards to the way. This should be the person who's going to be the teacher of Torah to Klal Yisrael. If you would make a list of what you need to be the teacher of Torah to Klal Yisrael, this is not what you would describe. You might maybe throw that in also, right? That he was, Rav Moshe Feinstein was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he had a brilliant man, he chas it over, etc. And he also was a very big Ohev Yisrael. Right? You would say it, and he also was. I'm writing the biography of Moshe Feinstein, I leave out all of the erudition, all of that, I just write about how nice he was. You would say it's lacking in the biography. And that's all we get from Moshe Rabbeinu, because that's the biography. You find something extraordinary at the end of the parsha. We find the Torah describes in minimally the details that there is the Shoitri Bnei Yisrael took the makas for their brethren. So to draw a parallel, during the Holocaust, you had the people who were appointed having positions of power and authority over other Jews, and many of them abused that for their own benefit. And I'm not judging anybody. The circumstances were extraordinary. Where the Midrashim described what it was like in Mitzrayim, this is basically the similar situation. And these people rose to the occasion, and instead they used their position of authority to protect. Moshe Rabbeinu is going to the palace with his Kanim, and the Rashi says, what happened to those Kanim? They got scared and they stopped, left behind. Those Kanim eventually were not this Kanim anymore, and the Shoitri Bnei Yisrael became this Kanim later on. It means the leaders of Klal Yisrael is defined by the fact that you're going to Klal Yisrael, yes, you might be killed, but that's your job. You walk into the palace of Paro, there's lions there, there's guards there, and who knows what's going to be. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, we'll go. And they say, they're mishamet, they get nervous. I'm not judging them, I probably would get nervous also, right? But they can't be, they're eventually removed from being the leaders of Klal Yisrael. And the Shoitri Bnei Yisrael later on, Parshas Bo Lo Yischar Rashi says that they became the leaders because of the schools that they took the makas, they took the punishment for the brethren. So that was the thought process. So, okay, so this is very interesting to me that this is the Parsha Shmos has this message in multiple ways about this concept of the of Noisa Baal, of being selfless and focusing outwards, etc. So I said, okay, do we find this in the Haggadah? If this is such a central element to what we're doing, we would like to find this in the Haggadah. And I looked through the Haggadah, and it's not there. You don't find it, at least not explicitly. Maybe you can find a Medrash in one place, type of a thing. You bend your finger like this, and you can get it in. Until I found, look at number 9. Until I found a this is from the Chidor. And he wrote a pirush on the Haggadah called Simchas HaRegel. So he wants to know why we start the Haggadah with the paragraph of Holach Manyan, which is the beginning of the of Magid. Talks about Kol Dispin Yesav Yechel, Kol Dispin Yesav Yivsach. Why is that important that we're inviting people over here? Yes, we're, Jews are good, we invite people, etc. But why is that nikva, why is that established as part of the Nusach of the Haggadah? Why do we have it over there? See, he says multiple explanations, but this is the explanation he says over here in the name of Ateris Roshi Abba Murray, in the name of his father. Then he gives all these titles about his father, etc. So he quotes a chazal in the second line over there. Riyam Hay Yisrael Lukas B'Makas Ha'orif. Klai Yisrael should have been, the Medrash says that Klai Yisrael, by the Makkah of Orev, Klai Yisrael should have been attacked as well. Elisha Kadosh Baruch Hu Hilkes Mitzrayim Aleim. Bershom sort of replaced the Makkah, which is supposed to be a Klai Yisrael, the Mitzrayim took it instead. Hadolik Sivan, Sati Kafrachom Mitzrayim, and the Pasuk says that the Rosham gave Mitzrayim as, for Klai Yisrael, he did them a favor, he gave Mitzrayim as the Kaifer, as the redemption for the payment instead of Klai Yisrael. So, Yeshadatik, my Shaita to the Orev, she said, Yehoyim Malkis, Mishar Malkis. Why should they have been punished by Orev? Why is we saying that really the Mark of Orev should have went into the land of Goshen? It should have affected the Jews also. The Jews should have been in danger, etc. And they weren't. What's it about? Okay. Now, he brings over here like this. So he suggests, so what's the raya from the etc. So the next line. See, he explained that based on the Reno Bachya, the Mashan Ishtav the Mitzrayim, Hoy Bavur, the Yad Oni Ve'evino Hikziku, should be Hikziku. Halimo Ayan Masoy Stoka, for Hoyitzari Ayan. So this is what the Reno Bachai says. Reno Bachai says that the reason why Klai Yisrael was Ishtav the Mitzrayim is because they were not. That they were not benevolent in helping other people. He says they were Hoyt Tzoriayin. Tzoriayin is Elba Gematria Toflamid, and that's the amount of years they were supposed to be in Mitzrayim. It was 430 years because they were Tzoriayin. They were cheap. They did not give their largesse to other people. I'm not going to read the details over here. So he says like this. Now, what happens is why Orev? Why do the animals not attack human beings in general? Because the Chazal say that there's a certain, the animals are able to recognize a certain godliness in man, and therefore they don't attack man. So the Zohar says that a person who doesn't do staka loses that godliness. So what the Chidor's father is suggesting that is why Orev should affect the Klai Yisrael also. Because as much as this is true, that there was a lack of stokka, there was a lack of that care about other people, the Baruch Hashem's Selam Elokim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what we know about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he created the world to give. So that's the form of God that man was created in, is that ability to be a giver. When man is not that individual who's giving, he loses his Selam Elokim. So now the animals are no longer scared of him. So the Medrash says that Klai Yisrael should have been affected by Orev, not by the other Makkahs, because it wasn't a question of a punishment. It's a question of the natural flow of events, is the animals aren't scared of the Jews because they're not acting the way they're supposed to be acting. That's what he wants to suggest, is the pshat. Now he quotes a Medrash that when they left Mitzrayim, so on page 5, at the end of the third line, this now makes very sweet with what we understand over here. What this gives us a sweetness of understanding Me'amor Mazal, the Medrash Avkir. So that there's a Medrash called Medrash Avkir, which is not extant, but we have some pieces quoted here and there from the Medrash Avkir. When Klai Yisrael left Mitzrayim, Korsu, they made a bris amongst themselves. So part of Klai Yisrael Mitzrayim, they made a pact amongst themselves. From now on, we're going to do chesed to each other. That's what the Medrash says. So why did that? That is specifically what Klai Yisrael is leaving Mitzrayim. They're about to leave, and they say, "Okay, they get together to have the final town hall meeting, and let's get together and commit. What are we committing to? Doing chesed to each other. Why now?" So he wants to suggest that based on what we're saying, they realize that this was the source of the galus. This is why Klal Yisrael had been an avdus for many years, and they realized that that's the problem. They made a commitment to change. That's what he suggests. Now, it's interesting. The Tana d'Yehu has almost the exact same medrash. I did not put it inside. And the medrash, the language of the Tana d'Yehu is when Klal Yisrael was in Mitzrayim, they made this pact, not when they left. Which fits with what we're seeing in Parsha Shmos, that Adarab, the Jews were there for each other. And the fact that there was a Jew which was a tattletale, went and told Paro about Moshe Rabbeinu was extraordinary. Rashi says on that, okay, Nadad, Vayira, he was scared. He says, okay, Nadad, the word, now I know. So Rashi says, the matter is known. That's the simple reading of the pasuk. Rashi says, no, that's not what it means. It means now I understand why the Jews are in Galus. Because if they can say lashon hara about one another, they deserve to be in Galus. The state of being of the relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu that we're supposed to have is defined by being not in Galus, being with the Kodesh Baruch Hu in Eretz Yisrael. That's the relationship we're supposed to have. Galus is a physical representation. We're not in the state of being that we're supposed to be. So if the root of the relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu is built in the fact that we act like Him, Lashon Hara is impossible. That if I'm living my life that I want to give to others and care for others and be nice to others and be sensitive to others, I can't say Lashon Hara about somebody. I can't endanger his life. Which is the example over here. Rapam Zatzal once said that his mother never spoke Lashon Hara in her life without ever learning the Hilchos Chafetz Chaim, Hilchos the Halachas. She had such a love for every person, it was impossible for her to say something negative, which in any way possibly might damage somebody. So that's a description of the morale on in Gur Aryeh, on that Rashi. He wrote a commentary, a super commentary on the Rashi called the Gur Aryeh. He says that the relationship of the Jews with the Kodesh Baruch Hu is built on the fact that we have to have this intimate relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. But Lashon Hara means we're not focusing on that type of relationship, we're focusing away from that. So they have to be in goals. So I want to see if we can explain a little bit better. So I found this Chidah. So the Chidah says the introduction to the Haggadah is Chesed, the introduction to the is outward focus. It's not being self-centered. It's out there. It's this taking the world from being egocentric to being other person-centric, to being God-centric, theocentric, etc. Okay, and then it ends. That's like the first line of the Haggadah, and then it ends. So what I found was to think about that. That's very fascinating. Like, why don't we have, if that's so significant, and that's why that's the first thing we're hearing in the Haggadah, why doesn't it come up again and again and again throughout the Seder? So now, that's my introduction to tonight's.
I spoke about Rachel and Esther. Shlomo HaMelech was also in the middle. What was his tzinius?
The tzinius was his father asked him to do a job. He came back and said, "I did the job." He just also became the Melech Yisrael. I don't know about you. If I come home after becoming the Melech Yisrael, I say, "Dad, you know what happened? I became the Melech Yisrael." Says, "That wasn't my job. So why am I focusing on myself? My job was to respond to my father about what he asked me to do. That's what I'm focusing on. I also happen to come back with Israel. No. All right? Let's go back to Beis Medrash. You know? Like, that's how the Pasuk seems describing it. I mean, obviously, this is the first Melech Yisrael. It's an historic moment in Klal Yisrael. Mm-hmm. And the natural reaction of any human being who has any element of ego is going to say, wow. And even if you don't, I once had this aura. Just respond to the question. Rishil Salanter, early in his life, wanted to be known as a tzaddik nisri. He wanted to keep his life, his relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu very private. This way he could stay focused on his service without being worried about what other people think, etc. So he planned to present himself as a very plain individual. Rav Chaim Brisker was said that Rav Sisal Lanter was one of the three biggest geniuses of the generation ahead of him, before the Rav Chaim, his preceding generation, both in his abilities and in his knowledge. And he was extraordinary Talmud Chacham. So Rav Sisal Lanter did two things to prepare himself for this plan. First thing he did was he memorized all of Shas, Gemara, Rashi, Tosis, verbatim, word for word, so he'd never be seen opening a Gemara, because he could always review it Baal Peh without ever having to use a Gemara. Number two, he learned to take his very intense davening into a very motionless, emotionless, quick, seemingly cavalier davening. So I'm reading this story. There's a sefer called Yad Yecheskel from Rechatzel Levenstein that Shmuzin that he said when they were in Shanghai. In the back, it has stories that he said over while he was in Shanghai. So it brings this story. I'm thinking to myself, you know, if I knew Shas Baal Peh, I'd make sure that you know about it. And I wouldn't tell you because that doesn't pass. We're talking. The Gemara Megillah. Your Gemara Bays at the bottom, the third line. I would throw it in here and there till you get to know. He didn't want that. He had no interest in that. Because that's just a distraction from being who we wanted to be. I really don't define myself by you. I define myself by, I care about you. I focus on you. I focus outward. I focus on about me. So Shaw was that times a thousand. That was what I suggest by Shaw. Okay. So can we maybe find something more at different points here in the Gutta that we're missing, that is important, we should understand, this will help us understand it. So let's work backwards. Look at number 7. So that's on page 3. So the Nevesh HaKayim, Rav Chaim Volozhiner, he's writing now, he wrote, the Sefer Nevesh HaKayim is divided into 4 Sha'orim. A Sha'or basically is like we have in the Aramaic, the word Baba is a Sha'or, it's a gate. Gate meant a section. So the Shari Tshuva, there's 4 sections of the discussions about Tshuva. So he had 4 Sha'orim. In between the third and the fourth Sha'or, he calls Prakim. Some small points he wants to raise. He says, you follow me on this journey up to this point. You've learned tremendous things. You've reached tremendous levels. There's a concern I have that you might become a Balgaiva. You might become a person who has feelings of boastfulness, even if not necessarily willing, you're going to express it, but you're going to have haughtiness inside your heart. And this is a dangerous thing. So he writes over here, Omnam Hisham Rabbi Zor Moed. I want you to be very careful. I do not want you to have feelings of haughtiness. You reach the level of serving God with a tremendous purity. You wouldn't even notice that you're doing that. But you have to look out for that. It is an abomination to God, a person who has haughtiness in his heart. Nobody sees it. It's just in your heart. The Bereshit finds that an abomination. This is the foundation of all problems. All Midas Rose is the foundation of it is Gaiva. This feeling of Gaval Lev. I saw this parallel. You have in the world of Tuma, you have what's known as an Ava Tuma, primary source of Tuma. There's one source of Tuma which is called an Avi Avosa Tuma. It's the source of a source of Tuma. And that's the Tumas Mace. And every other, and then it's a level above. It's the source of everything else. So Gaiva is that. So I wonder, what does he mean? And it hit me that I think, and he brings Chazals about how bad it is, a person who has Gaiva is like he built a Bama, and the Russian wails about him, he's pushing Hashem Kodesh Baruch away, he's like he did a Avodah Zarah, it's like he was Kafir Be'ikr, it's like he did all the Arayas. There's all different drushim about how bad Gaiva is. And that's the continuation over there for 8 Perakim of this is the first Perak of that, these Perakim. So why is that? So if you think about it, so Midas Rose, Taiva, Kina, Kas, they all start with the word capital I. I want, I'm jealous, I'm angry. There's always that word I at the beginning of that. That's the gaiva. You're always starting with, I'm focusing on myself. It's all about me. And therefore, I'm jealous. Therefore, I'm angry. Therefore, I have desire. Therefore, but that's always the therefore. The I is always the problem. Okay. He's kilo, he's kar from Iker. He's like, he did a Vodazor. It's considered as if this person has served the Vodazor by banging a Balgaiva. So if you look at number six, I know this, my notes are backwards. I shouldn't become a Balgaiva. Okay. This sefer that I found this, and I actually recalled I seen it once in Reb Simcha Zissel, the Alter from Kellum's Svarim, but I could not find it again. But I found it in the sefer. This is an extraordinary thing to think about. Avraham Avinu is the first person. He's the greatest philosopher who walked the face of the earth, as far as we're concerned. He's 3 years old. He starts contemplating the world, different than the whole society around him. He says there has to be more. And he sticks to it, because I'll say for 45 years, the Rambam says. Till the age of 48, he comes to the final conclusion, there has to be a God. I can't stay focused on something for 10 minutes. He's focused on this thing for 45 years. He doesn't let go. He questions, he challenges, he discusses. And he comes to the conclusion that there's a Barei Olam. Extraordinary individual. The description which the Torah gives us, and which Chazal give us, the Pesukim give us, is Avraham Avinu is the Amud HaChesed. So what's the connection between the idea of being the Amud HaChesed, the pillar, the founder of Chesed to the world, that he did Chesed LeAvraham, and to being the Rosh HaMaminim, the first person who came to recognize God on his own, the Rosh HaPhilosophim. He's the greatest philosopher who walked the face of the earth, and he's a real nice guy. Really? So I would like to suggest. You want to give a suggestion?
I would suggest that it makes perfect sense.
You know, let me. So after that, I'm going to go also. Let's see if we both agree. Let me say my point. Let's see if you agree with it. Okay.
Okay.
So the way we're saying, are you focusing at yourself? Or are you focusing outwards? The individual who's self-focused, the Stipe writes that the biggest impediment to the world, to the moon in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, is gaiva. Is that self-focus. The person who takes himself out of the picture, he sees the world as it is. There's this gorgeous world over there. There has to be a Balabira. He also sees every human being in the world and sees their needs. So the Amuna in a Kadosh Baruch Hu and the Midah of Chesed of Avraham Avinu are the exact same Midah. It's not two different things. It's two sides of the exact same coin, that ability to take himself out of the picture and focus outward on what is going on in the world around him. Okay. Moshe, we agreed?
Kind of, sort of, yeah. I would say it slightly differently in that it is Hashem gave us a tremendous, beautiful world with everything that we need in it. And Avraham Avinu obviously saw that and said, well, God did all this kindness for us, for giving us food and clothing and you name it, everything that we need, and we messed it up by not being kind to each other. But obviously God wants us to be kind to each other, and so he's essentially imitating God by trying to be kind to everybody.
Excellent, thank you. Okay, nice. That's not where I'm going exactly, but it's a very good point. Thank you. Okay. There's a fascinating thing about relationships between two humans, be a husband and a wife, or parent to a child, two friends. Relationships are very, very important to us. They're very powerful, they're very meaningful, etc. And they give our lives security, safety, they give our lives feelings of not being alone, we give their lives many, many meaning, etc. What is very interesting about relationships is that when your goal of your relationship is yourself, it's not really a relationship. So you are the one who benefits from this relationship tremendously. You benefit much more from the relationship when you're not thinking about yourself in the relationship. When you're thinking about the other person, to care for them, to give to them, etc., you bond with them. You expand to beyond yourself. If you're whole, I feel so lonely, therefore I want you to be my friends, So eventually the focus is the person himself, not the other person. The bond doesn't exist. The bond gets damaged. The Rosh Hashanah created the world because he wants human beings to get a connection to him. So we know the Rosh Hashanah created the world. One purpose, Ramchal talks about this in multiple places, he wanted to be mative to the world. The Pasuk doesn't say that. The Pasuk says, last Mishnah in Masechta Zavos says that everything Rosh Hashanah created, what he created for his covet, for his honor. It says that everything called Nikra B'Shuva, the Chvodi B'Rosiv, you start to have a sisiv. Everything in the world, the Rosh Hashanah, I presented for the covet of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Rosh created the world for his covet, to create the world that he wants to give to us. And the answer is, from whose angle? The Rosh Hashanah created the world because he wants to give to us. How does he give to us? Because he allows us to bond to him. How do we bond to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? By living a world where our goal is giving covet to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yes, my life is more meaningful because I have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I'm going to do it because I want to have the relationship. So then the focus is myself, not HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't really have a relationship. But if my focus is L'chvoy di barasi v'tzartam ha-masis, so the Rosh created the world for his covet, and I live my life, but that's my focus, is to be able to give in this relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, just like I give in every other relationship which is important to me. I have a desire to be mated to somebody else. I bond with them. And then I get that goodness that Kodesh Baruch Hu wants me to get. So the Rosh created a world where he allowed us to live our lives. He doesn't need our covet. He doesn't need what we're giving him. It doesn't affect him at all. But he allowed such a world because he knew that we need to be able to have a life that we can give to him. Otherwise, what are we giving? And how can we bond to him? Rav Hirsch describes the process of Geula back on page 1. If you've heard some of my drushes over the years, this is one of my recurring themes. This rehearses the title of the word Geula. So a stranger is described as Ein Le'ish Goel. Goel is the relative who takes the need of his relationship as his own and stands up for him. The stranger in ordinary countries has no one to take such a place. But the citizen understands, the inhabitant understands, if the government is taking advantage of my neighbor, they're coming for me next. They're taking advantage of the illegal alien, of the alien, I'm not scared, doesn't affect me. The ger, in the sense of that Klaiso is going to be ger yazarach, they're going to be gerim, they're going to be sojourners, they're going to be aliens, has nobody to care for them. That is the state of Geirus. So Rehersh points out that Avraham Avinu was told by the Bris Ben Abbasorim, he's told, they're going to be Geirim. Vav Vodom, they're going to be enslaved. Vinosam, they're going to be afflicted. The beginning of Parshas of Eiro, when Klai Yisrael is going to be, the Geula takes place, I'm going to take away that burden. The Inui is going to be removed first. I'm going to take away the avoda. That's the second step. V'goalteyeschem is the act of taking away the state of geirus. The goyal is the one who says, I am here to be for you, to be there for you. That's the relative the Torah describes when a person's down and out and he sells his field. The person who comes to take the field back is called the goyal. He's the relative who cares. Geula is the state of a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch. You're not by yourself anymore. So Moshe Rabbeinu's first message to Paro, before everything starts, he says, you think the Jews are somebody that's not important, nobody's there to stand up for them, you can take advantage of them, do whatever you want with them. B'ni b'chari Yisrael. That's not true. That's Geula. So the Ramban, in number 1, writes that the Sefer of Shmois is called the Sefer of Geula. So Parsha Shmois is the first stage, the Avdus, which sets the stage for the Geula. Ve'era, Bo, B'Shalach, Klaiso, Liv Yisrayim, they come to Matan Torah, Mishpatim, they're given the details. Okay, I would suggest that that should be the end of Sefer Shmois. That's when the story of Geula ends. Karbanos, Mishkan, Karbanos, that's all part of the next book. So let's take Truma, Tetzava, Mosav Kisisa, Vayakal Bikurim, put it together with the next Sefer. We'll call that Sefer Taras Kahanim, and we'll call it, the name of the Sefer will be Truma, because it's not Vayikra, it'll be Truma, right? Why are Truma, Tetzava, Vayakal Bikurim, and Kisisa, why is that part of Sefer Shmois? So the Rabban, in his introduction to Sefer Shmois, says, because as long as we're not back to that state of being of the relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, we are still in Golus. Geula is when we come back to that state of being a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's the last pasuk of Sefer Shmos. Kodesh Amaleis HaMishkan, the Rosham's presence now is hovering in Klai Yisrael. So the whole Sefer is about the Ovis had a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. The Rosham's presence was in their lives. We lost that. We get it back finally at the end of Sefer, Shmos. So that's not a Geula until we get back to that state of being. That's the Ramban's introduction. V'hinei HaGolus, it's in that first paragraph. I just want to read that part inside. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Sixth line down, the last three words of the line. V'hinei HaGolus einenu nishlam. The Golus only ends ayom shuvam el mekayimam, when they go back to their place. V'amalas avisam yeshuvah, they go back to the greatness that their forefathers had accomplished. K'shiyotzim b'mitzrayim, Klai Yisrael leaves Mitzrayim. Av b'isha yotzim b'beis avodim. Adan Yechashu Goylem, they're still in a state of Gula, of Golus. Kihoy Barat Lalahem. Nebuchim Amidbor. However, Kishabo El Har Sinai, they come to Har Sinai. Vasu Amishkan. Vashava Kadosh Baruch Hu. Vahishkinosa Beinayim. Now the Russian, we build the Mishkan, the Russian puts its presence amongst Klaisul again. Oz Shavu El Malasa Vesom. They go back to the greatness of their forefathers. Shayyusayd alay alayim. The Russian's presence hovered over the tents of the forefathers. Behem himer makova. Vos nechushu geulim. Now they're considered geulim. V'chein nishma sefer zeh. Be'yishlimo inyan ha-mishkan. Be'yos kod Hashem molei oysoy tomi. So the final moment of geula is that. That is the Ramban saying, this is the rehearsal's point. It's a relationship. It's a presence together. Russian's there with Klal Yisrael. So Rosham's goal is to be with Klal Yisrael. But how do we do that? By focusing on the Kodesh Baruch Hu, not on ourselves. So if the purpose of the Geula, which we're talking about the night of Pesach, is to reestablish that relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, to allow the Rosham's presence to become real in our lives, we're going to focus on the chesed the Kodesh Baruch Hu did for us, to the point that we are ready now to serve Him. Rosh Eisman in his Haggadah points out, he says that the final goal over here is to eat the matzah and to eat the maror. There's a machlokes rishonim, is this mitzvah of the night of Haggadah, it's a mitzvah which is independent of the mitzvah of Pesach, matzah and maror, or this is an intrinsic part of the eating matzah and the maror and the Pesach, is to tell the story. When you tell this story and you see how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done for you, and you feel that feeling of Hakaras HaTov, you are now ready to give back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's what it means that you eat matzah, you eat Pesach, you eat mortar. So the person who sits by the Seder and he kvetches, oh, why do I have to eat so much matzah? Why do I have to eat so quick? Why is it so dry? He didn't get the point. The point over here is we want to serve. I want to give back. Right? The parent is making lunches for their children, right? And they're saying, oh, I wish I didn't have to do this. Yeah, some days it's really bad, it's really hard. But overall, yes, but you know, would you refer that you didn't have to do, of course not, I want to do this. The husband was helping around the house, hopefully is saying, I want to do this. The wife was making stuff for her husband, so hopefully saying, I want to do this. I feel that a pleasure in giving because I want to give to this person. So, I would suggest the following. If you go back to page 2. And number 4, there's an extraordinary medrash, which I hope I'm not overloading you with a lot of information. So let's review to what we have up to this point. So we spoke about the idea of the midah of being selfless, expressed by Rachel, by Shaul and by Esther is the Mira of Geula. So now we said that that's by Purim. We saw the same description by Moshe Rabbeinu and by the Shoachrim in Mitzrayim. We saw the Chidor, which says that that's why we introduced the Haggadah by starting off with this focus. I'm going to focus outwards to give to others, not about myself. We then question, so why is it not coming? Why does it stop there? We said, because the point over here is the outward focus, not just for others, but to relate to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Because Geula means a relationship. A relationship has to be on focusing on the other, not on myself. The other being over here, Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Bereshit created a world which we can focus on him and give to him. And that's the purpose of the night, is to get to that point where we can focus and we can give. We mentioned one point over here, which I would like to expand on a little bit. My wife spoke about this more at length by her lady share on last Shabbos. There was a man who lived in Gan Eden. His name was Adam. He lived in the perfect relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. What went wrong? So Rav Dessler points out that what went wrong is he made this calculation that I can serve God greater, better when there's a challenge. So his goal was service. His goal was giving. So, sounds beautiful. But it's not exactly what God wanted. It's not exactly what he wanted. So, on page 2, there's a piece from the Kuzari, which the Kuzari says, I think the analogy would be like this. I want to bring a present to somebody. Husband wants to bring a present to his wife. He loves chocolates. There's his favorite thing, and he boutique chocolates, and he goes out and he buys this $100 box of chocolates, you know. He comes home and gives it to his wife. His wife doesn't like chocolates. So she appreciates very much the thought, but there's a sort of element like, you don't really know what I want. You're not really focused on me. You focus on yourself. You didn't, and he does it again. It's even less geschmack. If we want to have a relationship with somebody, it means we have to be able to see the world, what they want, what's interesting to them, what's important to them, see it from their vantage point. So the Kuzari says, okay, you want a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, that's great. You have to know what he wants. I feel so close to God when I do X. Well, is that what he wants? But I feel so close to him. So if the goal is me feeling close, that's giving chocolates. I feel so close to my wife when I go out and I buy these things which are so valuable to me and I give them away to her. But you didn't really bond. You thought about yourself. The knee is in there a little bit. The knee is in there, and that we said that's going to be the source of all of the problems. Because the whole goal is to take the knee out of the picture and put God in the picture. Or put another human being in the picture. So if I can't figure out what you want and what's really important to you, I'm just saying, I enjoy this, I would love to give it to you. I feel so close to you when I do that. I feel very spiritual. But I didn't connect to God. That's what the Kuzari says. You can come up with all these different rituals and different ways of feeling close to God. But until you hear from God what he wants, you're not really getting close to him. And that's the idea behind the Mishkan, that there's details upon details upon details which have to be met, Kashativa Hashem as Moshe, again and again and again and again. And then you can have a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So other Marishan, by making that consideration, which even though he said, I'm giving greater glory to God, it's not what he wanted. And he, deep down, he knew that. So the Torah sees that as an Aveira. And the result of that is Misa. As when there is giving is life. Mayim Chaim is what gives out. It gives forth. It gushes forth. It's focusing outward. What gives us Tzelem Elokim, that the Neshama is inside the person and therefore the body is alive, is that ability to be a giver. There was one moment where Adam Rishon a little bit put something else in over there. So the body can no longer have that power to maintain that ability to be a giver for years and years, for immortality, until the process of the rectification of the Bria. And that's Tumah. That's the Avi Avos HaTumah. Because Tumah is when there's something emptied out. There was greatness there, there was Kedusha there, there was life there, and that has been emptied out. That's called Tumah. So Gaiva is the Avi Avos HaTumah. It's the primary source of all of the Tumah of all the Averis, because it's the self-focus as opposed to the outward focus. So the last point I want to say over here is, this is Chet HaEgel. And there's an extraordinary Medrash, number 4. So the post is Sarah Meher Min HaDerech HaShur Tzivisim Asul HaMeigel Masecha. They went astray very quickly. So how quickly is very quickly? 40 days? 39 days? The Medrash isn't happy with that. That's not enough for the Medrash. 39 days. So the Medrash says one, two, three, four, five. The fifth line of the Medrash. Rameir says, Aflo Yomechad Hoya, even one day they were not totally bonded with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Medrash before says, the one opinion says that for 39 days they were neman to Kadosh Baruch Hu, they were trustworthy with Kadosh Baruch Hu, they were really beholden, they stayed connected, they lost it the last day. The next opinion says, no, 29 days. They were like that. 11 days they already were wavering. One of them says, one day they were with the Kodesh Baruch Hu perfectly, 39 days they were wavering. And the mayor says, even one day not. Under Har Sinai, the mayor says, they're already thinking about Avodah Zarah. That's extraordinary. So I would suggest, Ruchim basically says this, if I understand Ruchim correctly, that there was an element of the anis left by them at that moment. It wasn't total negation of oneself. Now, we're asking for the Jews at the moment of accepting the Torah an extraordinary level that there's total no focus on oneself at all. Only focus on the service of the Kodesh Baruch Hu. A tremendous level. Rameir says they didn't reach it. The root of the problem that they later on they can come and make a decision against God was because of the original acceptance. There was, I chose. There's that word I again. That's an extraordinary statement. We always choose. What are we supposed to do? But there's moments when it doesn't make sense to me. And I really do not want to choose that. And it's hard. And I would really like to do otherwise. And I say, but God, that's what God wants. That's the choice which we need. The choice is, it makes so much sense to me and I agree with this and it's so uplifting and so spiritual and so good and all those wonderful things which support my decision. The I is going to be left over there. The ani is there still. And that is how it's possible 40 days later to make a decision against God. Because at the original moment, there was a greatness that man could come to the recognition that life is about serving Kadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, that's the best thing for us. And therefore, we're going to choose it. And there, it's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's a tremendous level. But it's not the final. Avraham Avinu chooses to serve God. Rashi says, because it makes so much sense that Kadosh Baruch Hu is such this wonderful being and he gives and he's loving and I'm going to give and loving also, etc. Throw your wife out. Shecht your son. Those have to be the tests. They can't be nice, be really nice, be really, really, really nice, because that makes sense to me. Then it's about what I think is right. So at the end of the day, it's my way to feel close to God. But it's about me, to some extent. Version says, okay, it makes zero sense to you. Oh, what are you going to do? I'm doing it anyway. Oh, now you've accepted me. And that's when Avraham Avinu gets the relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. When I give to my partner, I give to my friend, I give to the other, I give to Kadosh Baruch Hu, because that's what they want, even though it's not beneficial for me, it's not about me at all, then I truly have a relationship. And that's the flow of the Haggadah. We start with this once upon a time, we didn't get that 100%. And we're going to try and rectify that again. This time we're going to say we're going to focus outwards. We're going to focus on how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done for me. We're going to take ourselves out of the picture and put HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the center. So finally we were ready to come to the point where we just all we can do is give back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by doing his mitzvahs. So Ramlil says, if you don't take this message that why we have Pesach, why we have Matzah, and why we have Maror, and we don't internalize that's what we're doing, is we're focusing on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what he's done for us. If we don't do that, I like to taste the Matzah. That's beautiful. That's not what it's about. If we can internalize that message, then we're zoicha to the Shir Chadosh of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's going to be a geula. There's going to be a true relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The distance which we feel, the galus, which is the distance, will be geulim, which will be represented by being together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with the Shekhinah, Beis Hashem, in Eretz Yisrael together. Thank you for listening.